Well, seems we've been bushwhacked right in our own base of operations. Put them down, boys.
Nice and slow. One at a time, Holly suggested.
All of the black rifles were clipped to their armor on slings, and it took the men a moment to undo them and place them on the floor.
Pistols, too. In a pile. That's good. I know some of you are packing backups, but I only like surprises on Christmas and birthdays. Sudden moves make me twitchy. Put your hands on top of your heads and keep them there. Next round goes into something softer than Kevlar.
They did as they were told. FBI? The old man had read Holly's jacket. Are you kidding me? Don't you know who I am?
She's no cop,
grunted the man Holly had shot. He was red-faced and wheezing.
She's Monster Hunter International.
That's right. So I guess you can say I'm violating the shit out of your restraining order. Hey, are those zip ties?
She gestured her pistol at one of the vests.
Awesome. You get to zip tie your buddy's wrists together. You heard me. Nice and tight.
She waited until he'd done the other three.
Mosh, find him. Watch out. That's Ultimate Lawyer. He's a kung fu expert and an attorney.
Kung fu?
Please. I do Krav Maga, Muay Thai, and Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu. That particular hunter was rather intimidating, and Mosh didn't really relish the idea of going near him. He saw Mosh looking at him.
Mosh, huh? Thought you looked familiar.
Relax, buddy. I know the drill. He stuck his own hands through the zip-tie loop, then bit the end and pulled it tight with his teeth, securing himself. By the way, love your work. Hold the Pig Steady is my favorite workout song.
Thanks,
Mosh answered, not really sure what else to say. Once they were bound, Mosh made sure the zip ties were tight, and then used the rest of the zip ties to attach their hands to the straps on the next hunter's armor. He figured that would make pursuing them sort of like playing Twister. It only took a minute, and none of the paranormal tactical men tried anything, but he was sure that was all due to Holly's readiness to shoot any troublemakers in the face. He tied Armstrong's wrists to one of his men's pistol belt. That way, Armstrong's hands were pressed against the other guy's crotch.
"Is that necessary?"
Armstrong asked.
"Necessarily hilarious," Mosh answered.
"Pick up their guns," Holly ordered.
Since there were four rifles and four handguns, that was a lot more difficult than it sounded. But he got the pistols partially tucked into various pockets and managed to sling a rifle over each shoulder and one in each hand, all without shooting himself by accident. So he called that a win.
"Listen, guys, we didn't have a choice."
Holly got behind the wheelchair.
"We've got to run. But this was nothing personal."
"You shot me."
"Yeah, yeah. Sue me."
Ultimate Lawyer chuckled.
"Oh, don't worry. We will."
Holly looked to the leader.
"Look, Armstrong, Stricken is using you. He already knows how to stop the monster, but he's willing to let all of those hunters in there die first just to score some political point. I'm not going to let that happen. And the doctor here is going to tell me how. After that, you can have him back."
"Don't come after us. You don't want that much blood on your hands, and I don't want your blood on mine."
But Armstrong wasn't in a listening mood.
"You'll pay for this. Kidnapping..."
"It isn't kidnapping."
Holly began pushing the wheelchair away.
"It's borrowing."
"Assault?"
"Attempted murder," corrected Ultimate Lawyer.
"You'll pay for this, Newcastle!"
"Bye-bye,"
Holly said. Armstrong was still shouting after them. The old doctor was cursing. Holly took the next corner and pointed them back the way they'd come in. The wheelchair was capable of a surprisingly high rate of speed. Mosh followed along carrying almost 40 pounds of extra guns. At one point, a hunter's pistol worked its way free from his waistband and landed on the carpet with a thump. He turned back to retrieve it.
"Leave it," Holly ordered. "We've got to keep moving. I think Armstrong's got help on the way."
"How?"
"I didn't think of it at the time, but the way he said he was being bushwhacked and where was too convenient. It was probably because he had his radio on."
"Oh, man!"
Mosh looked back down the hall. He couldn't hear anything now, but that was probably because the hunters were trying to figure out how to free themselves from the zip ties.
"They're gonna be really mad."
"Well, duh. I did shoot that one guy."
"You promised not to shoot anybody."
"I promised not to kill anybody. Huge difference."
They reached the storage room and went inside.
"This will do. Help me barricade the door. It'll buy us some time. This is the only way into this room other than the service tunnel."
"How do you know that?"
Mosh asked incredulously as he dumped the black rifles on the floor. They had practically sprinted through here the first time.
"Situational awareness. Try to keep up."
Holly turned the doctor's chair to face her.
"Okay, Doc. We've got to make this interview fast, and then you can go back to your friends."
"They're no friends of mine. Times may change and men come and go, but there will always be opportunistic wastrels like Stricken, attached like leeches to a project like Mark 13. The more secretive and expensive the project, the more leeches."
"Great."
Mosh was surprised to discover how out of breath he was from the short run. He had used to work out religiously, but had let that slide along with everything else. He picked a nearby heavy metal shelf stacked with plastic elephant heads and struggled to drag it in front of the door.
"We're on the same page. We only want to stop this monster."
"Nonetheless, I refuse to share any classified data with you."
Mosh stopped to study the scientist for the first time. He was a tiny, shriveled man. His skin was thin and blotchy, with purple veins right below the surface. He had a blanket over his shrunken legs, but was wearing a white shirt, neat red tie, Mr. Rogers' sweater, and a gray tweed sport coat.
"Please?"
"What are you supposed to be, anyway?"
The doctor squinted to glare back at Mosh.
"Some sort of gypsy?"
By Mosh's standards, he was dressed rather conservatively.
"I'm a guitarist." "Devil music, I bet," the doctor snorted. "In my day, the only men that had tattoos on their necks were queers and convicts. I'm not telling you anything. Disrespectful youth have no understanding of what it means to keep an oath."
Not having a good answer for that, and expecting a bunch of angry hunters to kick down the door any minute, Mosh went back to stacking heavy boxes of paper onto his freshly moved shelf.
"Don't expend too much energy," Holly warned. "When they find us, if they can't get through the door easily, they'll blow a hole in the wall." "Okay, Dr. Blish."
"Don't say my name!"
the old man shrieked.
"Are you trying to get us all killed? If he realizes I'm here, he'll destroy us all. He hates me, and for good reason. I warned Stricken not to bring me this close, but he said that he wanted my visual confirmation. The manipulative swine! He had me dragged from the rest home and brought here despite my protests. I think Stricken merely wanted to see if my presence would provoke him into revealing himself. I am the worm on the end of the hook."
Truthfully, the idea that they might draw the monster's attention freaked Mosh out. A bunch of scary, six-armed, snaggle-toothed monster costumes stared back at him. Holly looked around cautiously, but didn't seem convinced.
"Fine. No names, then. But I really need to know how to kill this thing."
The old scientist's cranium seemed way too big as he shook his head in the negative. It reminded Mosh of a pinkish, purple lollipop sticking out of a sweater.
"Foolish girl. It is incapable of dying. We killed his body once. but he simply willed himself back into existence. If we could simply kill it, then we wouldn't have needed to bury the host. By every calculation, it should still be lying dormant. If you could totally destroy its host, it will simply find a new one, and the nightmare will continue.
Whatever. I only want to get my friends back. They're trapped inside the last dragon.
Then you have my condolences, because they're already dead. I will not help you. I am sworn to secrecy, and I am a man of principles.
Holly swore under her breath as she paced back and forth. It was obvious she was thinking hard. Her expression changed subtly before she gave Mosh a malicious look.
Is that how it's going to be, then?
I'm afraid so, my dear.
Well, that's too bad.
Dr. Blish, scientist from Decision Week, who worked on the Mark 13 project at Los Alamos, and who knows our monster personally?
He would have been a young man back then. I should probably point that out in case he doesn't recognize you, Dr. Blish.
Stop! Are you mad? If he hears, he'll kill you as well!
That's a risk I'm willing to take.
Holly raised her voice.
Did you get that? Blish. It's spelled B-L-I-S-H.
Suddenly she reached down, grasped the arms of his chair, and jerked him around. She bent over and stared him square in the eye.
Man of principles, my ass. Quit wasting my time.
Tell me what you know, or I swear I will get on the intercom and call this son of a bitch down on top of us.
Talk. Please, stop.
The doctor quavered.
I'll tell you everything.
The ancient scientist seemed like he might begin crying. Mosh had never helped abuse a senior citizen before.
Damn, Holly. You don't screw around.
Sure I do. Just not when my people are in danger.
Spill it, Doc.
Blish's lower lip was quivering so badly that for a second Mosh thought the old man was having a seizure.
We never intended for the project to end this way. We were the best and brightest, the superior scientific minds of our day. I was the youngest member of the team, but my theories on disembodied entities were considered revolutionary. Our goals were noble. We were trying to end the war with the smallest loss of life possible. The host subjects were all volunteers. They knew the risks going in. We simply never could have imagined this outcome. We would never have sacrificed those men. Only he doesn't know that. He thought that I lied to him. I swear that I didn't.
Mosh was confused.
Host subjects?
Blish wiped his nose with his sleeve.
You don't even know about them?
Enlighten us. Back up a little.
The being that is terrorizing your friends is only half the issue. The destruction is merely the manifestation of one man's anger over his betrayal. However hopelessly they are entwined, we are facing two separate foes, a human test subject and the disembodied creature which was bonded to him. The creature that is farming nightmares is merely an alp.
Bull,
Holly said.
There's no way. Alps are pathetic.
The only thing Mosh knew with that name was a mountain range. The skiing was awesome, and the nights were cold, but the women were beautiful. But he was fairly certain that wasn't what they were talking about.
What's an alp?
Mosh asked.
They're parasites, little floaty ghost bastards. We only spend like 30 minutes on them in newbie training. They're the monster under the bed that gives little kids nightmares and then feeds on their terror. A really strong one can give an adult bad dreams, maybe. That's it. Ignore them long enough and they get hungry and go away. They're not even puff applicable because they don't have a corpse to turn in. You're telling me this thing that's killing professional hunters and sucking giant buildings into other dimensions is an alp?
Yes, in part. It is the driver, but it is not the engine. The goal of my original experiment was to capture one of these nightmare feeders and find a way to magnify its strength.
Your goal was to make the boogeyman stronger?
Mosh was incredulous.
Are you nuts?
Shh. Holly put her hand on his arm.
The boogeyman is different.
The doctor sighed.
I will try to keep it simple for our sideshow freak.
Now that's just unnecessary.
The Alp, or Nightmare Feeder, as it is colloquially known, hails from another plane. It is a sort of nightmare world that only rarely connects with our own, and when it does, it barely registers in the human subconscious. My doctoral research documented the creatures, and we even succeeded in capturing one for study. Though fascinating, it was relatively weak, hardly dangerous at all. Our worst side effects were discomforting dreams and headaches. After the war began, we were invited to continue our work at Los Alamos, where we succeeded in capturing several more Alps. One of the other projects came up with a way to magnify the Alps' strength through exposure to... Never mind. I could talk for days about the details. What matters is that we made the Alps far more capable. Now the test targets were overwhelmed with nightmare stimuli, even while awake. It was astounding. Imagine ending a war simply because the enemy populace was too terrified and distressed to continue fighting.
You tried to enslave otherworldly creatures to use as a weapon,
Holly spat.
Gee whiz, I'm shocked that didn't work out.
That offended him.
I was trying to save lives, young lady. My project was considered a psychological weapon rather than a destructive one. You have no idea how desperate we were. Nothing was off the table. My compatriots were a diverse group, ranging from the keenest scientific minds to the strangest masters of the occult. Compared to the other projects that were being contemplated at the time, mine was one of the least lethal. We were trying to use imaginary horrors to prevent real horrors. We had no choice. The things that the other side were dabbling in were just as terrible, or worse. The Alp itself, even after being augmented, is an unfocused, erratic...
evil,
Holly supplied.
Misunderstood being. Alps are not intelligent enough to be capable of esoteric concepts like good or evil. They are little more than cunning animals that feed on psychic distress. Ours were more capable, but still a far more pleasant alternative than dropping an elder thing on Berlin. We had a weapon, but no way to control it, no way to aim it. We needed a delivery system. But what if we could give the Alp a controller? My research suggested that we could bond the creature to a human controller, sort of like how they bonded to a dreamer naturally while they fed, but a more complete synergistic bonding. We found volunteers, young soldiers who fit certain psychological and intellectual criteria, and who were also physically and culturally capable of blending into the target populations. The first bonding procedures worked fine. Early testing demonstrated we would be able to break the connections and release the Alps from their human hosts when the war was over. It seemed to be a smashing success, only we didn't realize what would happen when Project 13 went off the rails.
No kidding.
Mosh heard a noise. Someone was trying the door.
They found us. They won't do anything too fast. They're worried about hurting their charge. I'm assuming PT's pay will get docked if they kill him by accident. Keep going, Doc. How do we stop this super alp of yours?
The creature isn't the problem. It is merely following its instincts, creating nightmares and feeding upon the resultant terror. The danger comes from its human host. One of our volunteers turned out to be something special. He was our most promising subject, so we picked him to receive what seemed to be our most capable Alp. When a creature was bonded to him, it unleashed some surprising side effects. What had previously been figments of the mind were given actual form. Nightmares became real, physically real. They were small at first, but this sort of phenomenon was unprecedented. My team was delighted. The energy necessary to accomplish this feat was simply inconceivable. Our experiments had unleashed the unexpected.
The rattling of the doorknob stopped. Mosh picked up one of the rifles. It was an unfamiliar, bulky, plastic thing, heavier than it looked, but the controls made sense. It had a safety, a trigger, charging handle, and mag release where expected. A Hangamiya pit had taught him well, so Mosh knew he could fire it if he needed to, but it wasn't the technical part of shooting someone that was troubling him. Somebody kicked the door hard, but it barely moved the shelf. Holly raised her voice and shouted through the door.
"If you use an explosive to breach, the shock's liable to kill the old guy!"
Then she went back to normal.
"Let them chew on that for a minute. Please continue, Doc."
Dr. Blish didn't seem to notice the noise. It was as if telling the story he'd kept bottled up for so long was consuming all of his attention.
"The sudden increase in the Alp's abilities was all due to the volunteer. He seemed like a normal enough young man, rather brave considering what he was willing to do for his country. However, as time went on, things became worse. The nightmare creations became far stronger and unexpectedly aggressive. Members of my team died. We tried to break the bond, but it wouldn't work. This particular Alp had either gained sentience, or some dark aspect of the human host's personality had become imprinted on it. The immaterial being didn't want to give up its new source of power, so it began to manipulate him. First physically, then mentally. He tried to keep it in check, but it eventually turned him against us. It was a hard decision, but we had no choice but to terminate the project."
"That's a nice way to say they decided to murder the dude.
I thought you said you couldn't kill him."
"That was the problem. Anything capable of destroying the host would merely free the now intelligent, hyper-evolved Alp. Though certainly no longer as powerful, freed from a physical anchor, it would be able to roam the world doing harm. The range of the nightmare effect was limited to within a few hundred meters of the host's body. The unexpected physical changes caused by the bonding had rendered the host unaging, theoretically immortal, with many of the mutations that we see in advanced types of undead. Unmolested, there was no reason to believe that he wouldn't live forever. So we did the next best thing we could. We rendered the host catatonic."
"You couldn't risk killing him, so you made him a vegetable and buried him in a chemical weapons dump."
Holly whistled. "But now he's back and he's pissed."
"The idea was to leave him in stasis until we could find a cure,"
Dr. Blish said. But then he looked away evasively.
"You must understand, after decision week, almost all of the supernatural projects were scrapped, and the evidence was placed in storage. We were not allowed to look for a cure. The survivors of the research team had no choice but to move on with our lives. The decision was out of our hands."
"I'm sure it was," Holly muttered.
"I petitioned to reopen the study, but was denied. I am not the guilty party here."
Mosh didn't think they had time to debate the moral implications of mad science.
"If we're not supposed to kill him, what can we do?"
"Our safest solution is to convince him to go back to sleep. But good luck with that,"
the doctor answered.
"The behaviors being exhibited this time are different than before. It would seem that its physical form is capable of moving between planes now, Earth and the nightmare realm, which is why the host body has seemingly been able to move so rapidly about in this world. I would assume that is where your casino has gone as well. It seems that the evolution of the symbiote has continued during their long stasis. There is no telling what their capabilities are now.
You keep talking about this host. Holly picked up another one of the rifles and chamber-checked it. The door-kicking was making her nervous.
What's his deal?
One of the other research teams had hypothesized the existence of this kind of rare individual. The mystics and occultists referred to them as children of a special destiny, individuals who had been chosen by some higher power and given special gifts. At the time, I thought that was nonsense. Only now I must admit there really is something to it. We know there are other worlds, other realities that infringe upon our own. These are the source of some of the creatures that end up here. Sometimes there is a rare individual inexorably connected to one of these other realms. It is as if they are chosen to accomplish something, sometimes good, sometimes evil, or even completely incomprehensible. They exhibit strange abilities, even connections to tap into these other unknown realms. Intrusions by other worlds seem to create these specimens. Sometimes the abilities are passed down genetically, though they rarely manifest. But when they do, remarkable things happen.
Mosh and Holly exchanged a glance.
We know somebody that fits that description.
I strongly doubt it. The odds are astronomically against it.
Odds go out the window when my brother's involved, Marsh said. Owen has collected some absolutely bizarre karmic baggage. He's why I'm here. He's one of the people trapped inside the last dragon.
Dr. Blish's mouth fell open, but no sound came out. For a second, Marsh thought that he'd simply died of shock. Then his mouth began to move again, like a fish out of water gasping. Finally, he was able to get the words out.
No, no, no. Another one of them. And he's on the other side. This is terrible. Absolutely terrible. Do you have any idea what this means?
No. The door was kicked again. There was still no give. Mosh was just glad they had a hostage so they couldn't just start shooting through the walls.
Not really.
In the intervening years, we have learned from other incidents involving the bonding of humans to spirit entities from other planes. Stricken has procured some ancient weapons that he believes will not only destroy the host, but at the same time permanently banish the Alp back to its home. But if the host is destroyed, and there is another one of these chosen vessels present in its home realm—
We'd be banishing it to some place where it could just take over another body.
And doubtlessly continue to travel between our worlds, wreaking havoc on us all,
Blish finished for her.
Oh, hell no. This nightmare thing is not going to possess my brother.
Mosh looked to Holly.
Is that possible?
She shrugged. Holly had no idea either.
No way, man.
Mordecai's voice came into his head for the last time.
Thank you, boy. We know enough now. The champion will be warned. Now you must prepare yourself. You must face your fear.
The lights flickered. The banging against the door ceased. Mosh realized that Holly's breath was visible as steam. A tingle of dread rolled down his spine. He began to shiver uncontrollably.
It's too late.
Dr. Blish sounded utterly defeated.
He's found me.
Crap! He's here!
Holly sprang into action. She grabbed onto the shelf that was keeping out paranormal tactical and began pulling it aside.
Help me, Mosh!
Potentially getting shot by angry hunters, but maybe having help, sounded a lot nicer than being stuck inside with the nightmare monster. The metal of the shelf was cold to the touch. The lights died. There was a new presence in the storage room with them. Mosh could feel it, only a few feet away, standing dark and cold over the wheelchair that held the cowering scientist.
I remember you.
The words pounded their way into Masha's thoughts.
I'm sorry.
The doctor's voice cracked.
I'm so sorry for what we did to you, Marcus.
It's too late for apologies.
Mosh screamed as the world was swept away.